Hello, welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns. I'm just producing this podcast for people who'd like to be outside but have to stay in for obvious reasons. I'm now volunteering for the NHS. I'm here like a coiled spring, you know, waiting to be called. I'm just hoping that, I don't actually get asked to perform open heart surgery or anything like that, you know. I do have, obviously, I am medically qualified. I do have a first aid certificate, lapsed, but I'd give it a go. To be honest, I'd have a go, you know. I'd turn my hand to anything, but what I'm hoping for is that the first call I get is to supply an elderly lady who's isolated in lockdown, who's run out of cat food. And I could kind of, you know, work up to the open heart surgery. I've just finished recording the audio version of Bothy Tales. I started that project in July of last year. I don't know about you, I tend to sort of put things off sometimes. And it took the whole world going into lockdown for me to actually finish the project. There was finally nothing else I could actually. I'd done everything. I'd tidied out the kitchen. I'd arranged my pots and pans in rising order. Sorted and folded carefully all my carrier bags. There was absolutely nothing else I could do. I had to finish it. I have no idea when or if it'll ever see the light of day. It's gone off to be, I don't know where it goes actually. It goes off to the people at acx.com, who are like Amazon's sort of audio production wing, and they send it to Mars or something. I don't really know. But when making Bothy Tales made me think back, you know, not in a different age, a different life it feels like now. I used to go to Bothy's, and I don't know if you know, but there was quite a lot of controversy at one point because of the numbers of people going to Bothy's, and there was lots of happy banter about that on Facebook and things like that, and probably a few death threats as well. And I think there was actually probably some people who were actually quite keen to see a couple of Bothy's closed. Well, no one's going to Bothy's now, are they? sort of puts that debate into perspective, doesn't it? Because nobody's going now. Well, now, if the technology allows, I'm hoping just to invite Mr. Mark Horrell, author, cyclist and Everest climber, onto the show. Hey, I'm just welcoming to Outside In, our guest, Mark Horrell. How are you doing, Mark?
Hello, John. Everything good there up in Inverness?
It's as good as it ever is, to be honest, which is pretty marginal at the best of times, really.
Yes.
Now, I do apologise, because I did a podcast for you before, and apparently I got the name of your Everest book wrong twice. Is that right? That's the level of competence we have.
I didn't want to tell you that, John, but somebody else must have told you.
Yeah, somebody else pointed that out to me. Yeah, one of my many friends. And we're here to talk about. Tell you what your book about Chimborazo. What's it called? I'm abdicating responsibility.
Let me just check my notes. It's Feet and Wheels to Chimborazo. It's about a cycling trip that we did a few years ago. I've actually been I've been to Ecuador a few times, backwards and forwards. It's a fantastic place with volcanoes, very isolated volcanoes. It's an island. It's about 2,500 meters, but it's peppered with all these isolated volcanoes. It actually reminds me of the Assint region, quite close to you, actually, with Sullivan and Stack Polly and all the things like that, where you've got very nice landscape and all these very dramatic peaks rising up. So the Ecuador highlands are a bit like that.
Oh, right, okay. Except they're a bit bigger, aren't they? They're about 20,000 feet.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, in terms of In raw terms of actual meterage, that they're very high. They go up to highest one, Chimborazo, goes up to 6,300 meters. Many of them are 4,000 meters. But in terms of actual scale, they're very similar to Scottish and UK hills, I would say, because you're starting up from a very high altitude. So a lot of them are day hikes. You can do them in a single day. It's about 1,000 meters in a day. So in terms of actual scale, they're not that different. But of course, there are much higher altitudes.
I must admit, when I first saw your book, I thought you'd cycled up Chimborazo. Which, when I found it's 20,000 feet high and it's hot with ice because I thought that might be a bit tricky.
Yeah, we didn't take the bike up the last bit. I was I was reading your you've got a bike thing in your Bossy Tales, actually. I've just been rereading it on the
my expedition to Glenbeg Bothy. Yeah.
So you sort of you've got the jungle to deal with, the gorse or whatever it is you're cycling through, but it's kind of rocky, so we didn't take the bike up the final bit, and then the very last few hundred meters are actually on a glacier. So so what we did is we started at sea level. It had never been done before, or so we thought. We never know. We've not yet found anyone who's done it. So we started from sea level on the Pacific coast. We cycled up to about 4,500 meters. We did a circuit of Chimborazo, and then we climbed the peak. So the aim was to do it all in a single trip, human powered. That was what we did. It took about a week, but
I'm just curious.
A cyclist.
You started out climbing Snowdon your Everest climb by starting Snowdon. What gave you the idea? I mean, to be honest, I've not heard of Chimborazo before. What gave you the idea of climbing that peak then?
Everest or Chimborazo?
Chimborazo.
So Chimborazo is actually the passage that you very kindly read out last week in your fantastic actor's voice last week was from Everest, and I'd done that. That was a sort of plan that I had over 10 years. So 7 steps from Snowdon to Everest was about my 7-year plan to actually climb Everest. So we start with the hill walking in the UK, then I moved on to high altitude trekking in the Himalayas. Climbing peaks along the way, such as Kilimanjaro. Then I learned the ice axe and crampons technique. So I wasn't a climber, I was a hill walker. So it's gradually learning those technical skills. And then I moved on to the expedition style, where you're kind of siege style. You're spending a lot of time at base camp. You're gradually taking your equipment higher up the mountain, coming down, gradually acclimatizing. And then add the 6th step was my first 8,000 meter peak. It took me a long time to climb an 8,000 meter peak, and then the 7th step was Everest itself. So that was my 10-year plan. But Everest actually is only the highest mountain in the world if you climb it from sea level. If you measure it from the center of the Earth, then it's a completely different mountain. And that mountain is Chimborazo in Ecuador. It's on the equator, and because of the bulge of the Earth is rotating. It actually bulges in the center around the equator. So if you measure it from the center of the Earth, and there's actually a chap on the internet who's got a very detailed mathematical formula. He got all of the latitudes and longitudes of peaks in the world, and he bunged them into this formula. And he calculated that Chimborazo is about 2 kilometers further from the Earth's center than Everest. So it's actually the highest mountain in the world from the Earth's center. And we've been going there for years. And I went there with my wife, Adita. We both did the challenge together. She did it a lot more competently than I did, I have to say. We'd been going there for a few years. And she learned last time she was out there that a friend, this Javier, who's the chap who organises our logistics for us every time we go to Ecuador, he had a cousin who'd actually cycled from sea level to Cotopaxi. Cotopaxi is the second highest mountain in Ecuador. It's slightly more famous, possibly, than Chimborazo. A lot more people climb it. And it's also an active volcano. It actually erupted in 2015, so 4 or 5 years ago now. So his cousin, Javier's cousin, had actually done this summit challenge on Cotopaxi. And he thinks he was the first to do it on Cotopaxi, but nobody had ever done it on Chimborazo. So we thought, well, yeah, let's give it a go. And that's exactly what we did. And this is what the book's about. It's about...
Right.
It's about our whole quest. It includes some sort of elementary introductions to Ecuador from our earlier trips. So, some of the other climbs. It comes in three parts. And then the middle section, I'd actually never hadn't ridden a bike for many, many years. So the climbing was fine, which is what some people find difficult. I was very happy with the climbing, but I'm absolutely hopeless at cycling. So we did a little two-week cycle ride around the Scottish Islands, and that forms right. The middle section of the book. And that was our sole training for the for the cycling part. And then the final section is actually our sea summit adventure itself, where we start from sea level on the Pacific coast, cycle up to the foothills of Chimborazo. We do a full circuit of the peak. And then the aim was to actually get to the summit.
Right. You seem to have a sort of modus operandi of being a bit of a leap, because you said, well, I'll do Snowdon, and you decided, well, I'll do Everest then. And then on this one, you you weren't a climber at the time, and now you're doing this epic bike ride, but you hadn't done much cycling.
Yeah. So you noticed that part. I think
I can see a slight glitch there.
you and I, John, have I think similar writing styles, in that we like to laugh at ourselves. But we have a lot of fun, and we got a bit of humour in our writing from our various inadequacies, I think. So if you don't mind me saying that. So seven steps from Everest. I'm talking about I was a hill walker. I was fine at walking. I could walk all day, walk as far as you like, but I had to learn the climbing skills gradually. So that was it. It was a 10-year quest. And there's a lot of humour in my various inadequacies as a climber. But by the time I got to the end of that quest, I was a bit more competent as a climber. Chimborazo, I wasn't at all worried about climbing the mountain, but I was very, very worried about the cycling. To the cyclist. Fell off a couple of times cycling around Scotland, got exhausted, had to lie on my back flat out.
The Scottish hills
will recover, so
yeah.
Well,
I tell you what, why don't I read a little excerpt of your book about Chimborazo, and we could take it from there, and I'll put links obviously to the book for anybody who perhaps wants to buy it from Amazon or have a book for themselves, or and is Amazon the best place to get your book?
Or you can go to my website, markhorrell.com, and all the links are there. So that there are various places, various other bookstores, Kobo, etc. You can get it from
okay. So it's readily available, as they say. Well, thanks very much for talking to me, and nice to speak to you. And here's my little rendition of Mark's book about Chimborazo. Thanks very much, Mark.
Rommel roped us together and led off, with Aditya in the middle and me at the back. The first section had been easy. It didn't prepare us for what happened next. We stepped out onto an exposed, dusty ridge, and the wind hit us with a whirl. Dirt whipped up and struck me in the face, as though an annoying child on a beach had thrown sand over me. I panted with exertion as we fought our way along the ridge. Grit blew in my eyes, and I found myself swallowing a mouthful of sand. "This is the worst restaurant I've ever eaten in!" I screamed at Aditya in front of me. She held a gloved hand over her face. Clearly, she was finding it as unpleasant as I was. It was still pitch dark and much too early to put on our sunglasses. Soft and crumbling pebbles rolled beneath our feet. It was like walking on marbles, but our crampons helped us to gain purchase. Luckily, the exposed section of the ridge was only short, and soon we found ourselves beneath a rock wall. Rommel scrambled up and we followed behind him. But now we had new problems. The stone was so soft that it crumbled in my hands as I made my way up. Rock faces aren't so easy to climb when they have detachable handholds. We were directly above the normal route, and I could understand how rockfall had turned it into a firing range. "This is like climbing crumbly old cheesecake," I said. "Why do you keep talking about food?" Editha replied. "It's okay, we'll soon be on ice," Rommel said. That would be like the icing on the cake. But the wind whipped up again, and I didn't hear Editha groan. When the ice began at 5,650 metres, it was probably the most atrocious ice I had encountered in my life. Like the rock, it was dry, crumbly and steep, a type where you couldn't trust to arrest yourself in the event of a fall. If the British Army had designed this mountain as an assault course, they couldn't have done a better job. I expected any moment to come across a cargo net in the dark. In the darkness, it felt dangerous, but we pressed on. We would have to worry about the descent when the time came. The steepness and crappy ice conditions were relentless, but daylight's arrival at 6 o'clock offered a measure of relief. Now I could see how dry the glacier was. It must have been a few weeks since it had last snowed, and the powdery surface was like grey ash. I couldn't recall ever having seen such dry snow. The clouds were far below us, and the twin summits of Ilinitsa appeared on the horizon to our left. Chimborazo's summit cast a vast shadow across the Gran Arenal behind us. We crossed a nasty section of Penitente as we approached the Vietnamilla summit. These ice stalagmites are so named because they're supposed to resemble a procession of penitent monks. They come and go with the seasons and are formed by the action of sun and wind on newly formed snow. Contrary to their name, they are far from penitent. They stood in our way like a troop of doormen at a nightclub, refusing you entry because you're wearing the wrong shoes. My La Sportiva boots were bright yellow, which wasn't promising. "You're having a laugh. You can't come here with those on your feet," I heard one of them say to me. Or did I imagine it? Most of the pinnacles extended way above our heads, and the passages in between were narrow. We frequently had to climb up onto ledges to find a way across into parallel passages, awkward when tied to teammates. It was tiring work, but just before 7:15, we met a team coming the other way. This is always an encouraging sign on a busy mountain, as it usually means you're not far from the top. Their guide congratulated us on a successful ascent. "He's a bit premature, isn't he?" I said to no one in particular as we continued past them. A few moments later, we stepped onto the Vietnamilla summit. Chimborazo's second summit was not very obvious. The ice dropped slightly on the other side to a dip that you might describe as a saddle, but it was only a few metres and it rose again to the obvious higher point of the Wimper summit a short distance away. There was a magnificent view north to the three distinct volcanoes of Cotopaxi, Cayambe and Antisina rising above the line in the clouds. Cayambe, where we stood 2 days earlier, was the more distant, peeping timidly between the other two. The impenetrable maze of Penitentes covered both summits completely. I was already worn out, and I hoped the trail to the main summit would be easier than the approach to Ventimiglia. We stopped for a rest. Another rope team arrived, and the guide held his hand out to congratulate me. "I must have looked bemused. But we're not there yet," I said. The guide turned round and walked away from his group. "What's going on?" I said to Roman. "Why is everyone congratulating us? The ref's not blown his whistle yet. The summit's over there." I pointed to the Wimper summit, a black shadow curving above the Penitentes field. "Most people are stopping here," he said. "But why?" He let out a short burst of laughter like a cattle. "You guys are the strongest people here. It's okay. Have a snack and then we'll continue. It's not going to be easy." Well, that was from Mark Horrell's book, Feet and Wheels on Chimborazo.
I've got to be honest, I can't vouch for the pronunciation of some of those place names. When I get to a place name I can't pronounce, I have this idea. I sort of run at it, and I sort of half pronounce it, and then hope that nobody else knows I've got it wrong. I've been John Burns. Just remember, the devil wears Paramo. Thanks very much. Goodbye.